You're listening to the Nerd News Network. When news breaks, we bring you the pieces. From the studios of Wavefront Audiovisual Engineering in Schenectady, New York, this is Little Brother, the show where we talk about high technology, low intelligence, crime, greed, corruption, and all of the wonderful things that happen when you mix them together. Like any responsible little brother, we tell on Big Brother. My name is Chuck Ritter, and I'll be your host as we explore this world of the high tech. This is episode 162 of Little Brother for the 13th of April, 2025. Stay tuned. Little Brother is right around the corner. As always, I'd like to remind everyone that the opinions and views expressed in this program are strictly those of the participants, and not necessarily those of anyone else who may, for whatever reason, attempt to claim them. Responsible parties with an opposing viewpoint may request an opportunity for a rebuttal. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can write me at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com, or you can post a message on the blog at littlebrotherpodcast.com. So, let's get started. Chaofeng Wang, according to Wikipedia, is a computer scientist known for his research on computer security, cryptography, privacy, and cybersecurity. He is, or rather was until recently, the Associate Dean for Research at the Luddy School of Informatics, Computing, and Engineering at Indiana State University, Bloomington. I say was because he's disappeared. Somewhere around the end of last month, his profile was removed from the university website, and the FBI has raided his home on the 28th. Anyone who knows why this is happening is not saying, nor are they saying where he is. However, as of the 2nd of this month, a defense attorney speaking on his behalf has stated that neither he nor his wife have been arrested. If I see more information on the case of Mr. Wang, I will keep you posted. DropSite News is reporting that the Israeli government is conducting a sweeping crackdown on Meta's platforms Instagram and Facebook to take down posts that are critical of Israel or supportive of Palestine. While takedown requests of this nature happen fairly regularly, they are generally directed toward citizens of the government requesting the takedown. What makes this case different is that the takedown requests are disturbingly directed at posts from Meta users all over the world. The Israeli government's requests have generally indicated that the posts that they are requesting removed are either related to terrorism or to the incitement of violence. The reality, as I said a moment ago, appears to be that the effort targets any post that is critical of Israel or supportive of Palestine. This is dangerous on several fronts, beginning with the fact that it impinges on the free speech of citizens of other nations. It trivializes the accusation of violence or terrorism in much the same way that the charges of anti-Semitism are often trivialized. And, of course, it reveals that the government of the State of Israel has a disturbingly thin skin. In episode 157, I talked about a suit brought against Apple over allegations that Siri was inadvertently recording conversations of Apple customers. Apple has now settled the case for $95 million. Individual class members will receive between $20 and $100 compensation for having their privacy compromised. Not to be outcompeted, Google now finds themselves on the receiving end of a privacy lawsuit as well. In Google's case, the complaint is that Google is secretly gathering information from children who are using school-provided technology. Google offers a suite of productivity apps called Workspace for Education, which obviously is marketed to schools and is used by nearly 70% of K-12 schools in the U.S. The lawsuit alleges that Google has embedded trackers in the Chrome web browser, something I already believe to be probable, and that these are being used to track our kids, whether we like it or not. How about another case against Google? This is a case being brought against Google in California, alleging that Google is collecting data of mobile device users, both of Android and other platforms, in violation of California state law. More specifically, the lawsuit alleges that web and applications activity settings that users have set on their Google accounts have not stopped data collection as the settings suggest. Google counters that it's engaged in basic record keeping and that it hurts nobody. Finally, for better or for worse, the International Civil Aviation Organization is getting ready to deploy a new approach to travel documents. The new approach, called a Journey Pass, works through an app on your phone. The digital identity marker stands in for your ticket, your boarding passes, and even your passport. Once in place, facial recognition technology will be used to identify passengers in transit. In an effort to ease privacy concerns, the organization has pledged that data is purged within 15 seconds of each use. The new technology is expected to be deployed within approximately 3 years. And those are the headlines. You're listening to Little Brother. There's some interesting news on the Linux front. Although I've never seen it firsthand, there are computers that come with Linux as the OEM operating system. You take the computer out of the box, turn it on for the first time, and it boots Linux of one variety or another. In order to support this functionality, there needs to be a way to do an OEM installation of Linux. So this would be an installation where the software is fully installed on the device, but none of it has been configured. The first time you boot it, it'll walk you through a dialog to set things up. It's just like when you run Windows or macOS for the first time, or even iOS or Android. It sounds like it's something that should be standard, but it's actually kind of a big deal since most Linux installations are actually done by the end user rather than the manufacturer, and usually by purging Windows or macOS from your computer. With that background, let's take a second and talk about Linux Mint. So Linux Mint, which actually is the operating system I'm using and even using as I record this podcast, Linux Mint has had the ability to do an OEM installation right along. In all likelihood, the ability is borrowed from the Ubuntu distribution from which it's derived, so there's no surprises there. However, parallel to the mainline Linux Mint, the publishers also have been creating a different version that is called Linux Mint Debian Edition, which has been sort of their emergency fallback. In the event that Ubuntu became too enshittified, Linux Mint Debian Edition, or LMDE, could become the mainline edition. While it's been generally available, it has not been as complete of a product as the mainline Ubuntu-based edition. The big news this week, though, is that LMDE has now added OEM installation support, which is a clear indication that there is an intent that it could be included as the stock operating system on new computers, like the Ubuntu-based version had been before. What's exciting about this is that this sets the stage for cutting another corporate entity out of the loop, and it signals a position that folks behind Linux Mint maybe feel that their Ubuntu-free edition is getting ready for the big time. I might actually do an installation of it later, just to see how far it's come along. Thank you. On Friday, Democracy Now! Carried a story about Amir Makhled, a civil rights attorney from Michigan. Makhled is American-born and therefore an American citizen. Makhled was traveling overseas, and on his return, he had a run-in with customs. He was separated from his family, with whom he'd been traveling, and taken for questioning. He was asked to give up his cell phone, and the authorities chipped away at him and chipped away and chipped away and chipped away until he finally relented that they could have his contacts, but refused to provide them any information about which of his contacts were family, friends, or clients. I want to pause for a second here and recommend that everyone go take a look at XKCD number 538. I'll include a link to it in the program notes. It's appropriate here, but the summary is that it doesn't matter how strong your encryption is if you can be coerced into unlocking it. This is a lawyer. He knows his rights and he knows the law, and he was still able to be pushed until he relented to something. Near the end of the segment on DN, Makhled was asked for his advice on traveling. His single biggest suggestion was to power your phone off and leave it that way until you are clear. Both Android and iPhone will encrypt the contents of your phone's storage. When you power the phone off, it's locked, and it remains locked until the first time you enter your PIN, password, or pattern. This is not actually bad advice. In episode 155, I mentioned that law enforcement had expressed some alarm about iPhones automatically rebooting themselves when they are disconnected from the network because it ends up locking the devices. This is the same phenomenon. Powering off your phone and keeping it that way will keep the phone secure unless you unlock it. However, if you can be compelled to unlock it, keep in mind, these folks can and will wear you down until you do, then it really doesn't matter one bit. So while that is not really bad advice, let me offer better advice. If you travel, especially internationally, don't carry your real phone. Get a burner phone and use that. Don't log it into your real account at Google or Apple. Make a new one. You want this phone to be completely disconnected from your data, with the possible exception of your journey pass that I mentioned earlier. If your burner phone can use a micro SD card, which some Androids can, use that to move any data that you have generated while traveling off of the phone for safekeeping. Better yet, if you can, don't carry a phone. However, this may become less and less practical as tickets and boarding passes and the soon-to-come journey pass that may be taking their place are carried electronically. I am also including a link to the Democracy Now! Interview with Amir Makhled in the program notes. As usual, we'll end the show with the fail of the fortnight. This one is going to be a little bit more personal than most because this is one I witnessed firsthand and pertains to my immediate family. About 13 months ago, episode 145, I talked about a company called Change Healthcare and how they got pwned. A few days ago, a letter arrived in the mail from change healthcare. It was addressed to Ritter O. Yes, Ritter O. First name Ritter, last name O. Where the hell did they get that from? About 4 years ago, my mom passed away. Her name was Antoinette O'Brien Ritter. I was her executor, so in handling her estate, I had all of her mail forwarded to me. She usually signed her name Antoinette O. Ritter, so I think you can start to see how this is coming together. They confused her middle initial for her last name, and her last name for her first name. All right, that's strike one. So these folks are in healthcare. You would think that if you were handling health insurance data for someone, that you would know whether or not that person had current coverage. You would think that current coverage would not be a thing unless the customer was living. You would think that since she had passed away in a hospital, that they would be aware of her passing. So yeah, they sent a letter to somebody who they knew or should have known was no longer among the living. Although if they didn't actually know her name, I can see how that information might not have gotten to them. So that's strike two. And then what was the letter about? Well, it was about the data breach that happened 14 fucking months ago. That I talked about 13 fucking months ago. And offering her some token credit monitoring. Were she still among the living? That's well over a year that her data would have been out in the wild unprotected. So, yeah, that's strike three. All that to say, if their cybersecurity practices are as rock solid as their data hygiene, I no longer have any questions about how they got breached. Little Brother is produced, recorded, edited, and hosted by yours truly, Chuck Ritter. Special thanks to Fungaboo and the Helix Foundation for web hosting support. Shout out to the Albany 2600 Group. Special thanks to Fungaboo, Joe Cadillac, Eric Rosales, Julie Bernstein, and Bodhi Cheetah for story leads. Our headline music is Adrenochrome by Super Action 80. Our privacy news music is Capricorn Mix by Leander. Our fail of the Fortnite music is Space Reggae by Zap. Our opening theme music and bumper is Around Chaos by Heatseeker, and our closing theme is Space Debris by Captain Image. If you have questions or comments about this podcast or want to join the conversation, please drop me an email at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com or post a message on the blog at littlebrotherpodcast.com. Join us next time when Little Brother tells on Big Brother once again. Episode 163 will drop on April 27th. Stay safe and be well. He is, or was until recently, the Associate Dean for Research at the Luddy School of Informatics. On Friday, Democracy Now! Carried a story about Amir Makhled, a civil rights. So while that's not really bad advice, let me off better. And offering her some toket. If you have questions or comments about this podcast or want to join the conversation, please drop me an email at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com. Or, but you know what? Let's start the credits over.
game.